Welcome to Sunday with Kevin Clark. I am Kevin Clark. We are back. The Super Bowl is set and Lindsay Jones is here. Lindsay, hello.
Good morning, Kevin. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. A lot on my plate. Had a child a few weeks ago, just before the pod we were going to do 2 weeks ago. That was put on. we pressed pause on that. Tough decision, obviously, to not go forward with a random Monday pod. No, it's amazing.
Yeah, I can't believe your wife wasn't okay with that, but you know.
Yeah, no, I was like, I really, you know, kind of messed up my day here. You know, like, really, we're gonna have a kid now? All right, no, it's amazing. Letter of recommendation, having a child, it's the greatest thing you can do. All that stuff. I promise, I'm not gonna become. We are gonna do one thing with Danny Kelly later in the week. I promise, I'm not gonna become like a dad caster where I'm just talking about my child all the time. But Danny Kelly and I'll do something later this week, and then I'll try to keep that.
I feel a little attacked about that. It's fine.
You should no. I'm talking about people who just like take anything and they're like, well, you know, it's like with my kid, and it's like, well, okay. There's a lot of that going around.
Well, I'm just hoping at some point he makes a Slow News Day appearance whenever he's ready, when his hair
whenever
is ready,
he's ready,
when he's got a quarter zip. He wouldn't
ready.
Be the first person to poop on camera. It'd be fine. I don't want him to be self-conscious about it.
Scott Van Pelt, who was on the show earlier this year, suggested that Teddy come on the SVP pod and poop, since his dog did that earlier this year.
I mean, it would only be fair.
Yeah. All right. Super Bowl set. Eagles, Chiefs, probably the most compelling matchup when you think about it. This is the first time in 5 years, I believe, that the two number one seeds are in the Super Bowl, which suggests a couple of things. We're going to get to that. Eagles are a 2-point favorite after some really volatile line movements when it came out. It came out as a pick 'em, and then within a couple of minutes, it had changed like four or five times. And that just, I wouldn't read too much into it. I think sometimes you put on the tinfoil hat with line movements, but like in 3 minutes, I'm not sure that the entire world tilted on its axis and all that stuff. But we're going to get to that. But we will start, Lindsay. We have 8 questions, 5 minutes each. We know the format. We will start with the biggest question. Who will win the Super Bowl?
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200 or 2 billion, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one.
I mean, I wish I knew the answer to that right now, because clearly Las Vegas doesn't even know the answer to that. And Las Vegas always knows better. There's a lot of caveats, and I think a lot of those we're going to get into later. It's how healthy is Patrick Mahomes going to be? Is he going to have any receivers to throw to? I'm going to pick the Chiefs today, but I've got 2 weeks to change my mind.
I was surprised. I was looking at ESPN's predictions earlier, and I'm surprised how many people are picking the Eagles. And it's funny because going in, I'm sure you heard after the game last night, the Chiefs-Bengals game, Mahomes being like, oh, if only 5% of people picked us to win or something. It's like, nobody gave us a chance. And I'm like, that's not true. Like, maybe in the Cincinnati mayor's office, that was the case. But no, that's not true. And in this one, I'm actually surprised at the consensus building towards the Eagles. Now,
I think it's a lot of recency bias.
Sure. There's a couple of things here. Number one is the Eagles have the 3rd most sacks in the history of football. And I'm sure there's some 17-game caveat there, but that's still pretty significant. The Chiefs, by the way, are number 2 in the NFL in sacks with 55. Pretty significant difference. They are absolutely nasty in the Lions. They're absolutely the Eagles. The depth that they have is unbelievable. They generated, even yesterday, a 61% pressure rate in the NFC Championship game. That's the Eagles record since Next Gen Stats started keeping score. Okay. Now there's a couple things there. Josh Johnson couldn't even take a snap. They couldn't, they were teeing off on the guys, and we will get to the caveats, but we know that the Eagles can send guys. And it's hard for me because I normally look at the Lions. The biggest professional regret as far as picking things I ever have is not seeing the Bucs and Chiefs result coming.
Yeah.
Because it was so obvious in retrospect. And I was remember talking to Chiefs guys afterwards, and they knew it like on the first snap. You know, they were like, oh, no, we ran out of linemen. This sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cancun on three. You know, like that kind of thing. It was like, oh, man, we're not going to have this one. And they were letting Mahomes tee off. And so I'm trying to guard against that. And I'm looking at this Eagles pass rush. Jerron Hargrave won 50% of his pass rush snaps yesterday. Hassan Reddick had three pressures on only 14 pass rushing snaps. He had two of those being sacks. This is a nasty.
And one was the sack.
One was the sack
that changed that game.
That's correct. And I'm going back and forth on this. And I'm wondering, listen, Chris Jones is as good as any player in football. Led the all defensive tackles and pass rush win rate last year. He double teamed at 70%. Seth Walder had that. That's basically Aaron Donald level ratio as far as double teams and pressure rate. It's unbelievable. And what I'm going back and forth on is the talent difference in the line so significant that I'm going to pick against Patrick Mahomes, right? That's the question. And that's what happened with the Bucs there, is that the offensive line and the injuries made it so significant that you can pick against Patrick Mahomes. And oh, by the way, Tom Brady was on the other side of the ball, okay, which is important in that equation. And the more I think about it, with the injury, with the health, the more I think that they just can't. They just can't overcome it. And this Eagles roster, 153, 146, whatever the active thing is, it's just too nasty. And I think the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah. I think that's, I think that's a good, solid analysis on it. And I think we're going to go back and forth for 10 straight days, basically. I mean, not two full weeks here, because I think the line is going to continue to move. I think every time there's any little bit of update about what's going on with Patrick Mahomes and his ankle and his receiving core, it's going to shift a little bit. I've been really surprised about the Chiefs' lines over the last 2 years. I mean, the way that they remade their offensive line coming off of that Super Bowl in the 2021 season was really impressive. I mean, the way that they kind of had a mission and they attacked it. They threw a ton of money at it, obviously, but they knew what their weakness was and they fixed it. And the way that they've managed to, I mean, you said they have the second most sacks in the NFL, and yes, it's a big gap between them and the Eagles at number
basically one. Basically a sack per game.
But that was probably outside of the, like, what is this offense going to look like without Tyreek Hill question? Where was the pass rush going to come from was my other big question for the Chiefs outside of Chris Jones, because we know what Chris Jones can do, but we've seen him take this monumental leap. But the fact that they're getting significant contributions from Frank Clark, who has gone absent for long stretches of seasons since he signed there, or they traded for him and then he signed there. They've gotten production out of George Karlaftis, like more than I expected that they were going to out of that rookie. So, you know, I don't know if the talent gap is as big as it was. I mean, I think in that Super Bowl 2 years ago against the Bucs, I mean, it was like a JV team playing one of the best defenses of the last 15 years. And it was unfair. It was a complete mismatch there, right? I don't think the gap is that large this year. So I just want to see how healthy Mahomes is going to be. And then just how they're going to scheme it up, right? I guess those are my questions. So right now, I'll take Chiefs, you'll take Eagles, and one of us will be right. It's great.
All right, the alarm has sounded. We have to move on to the next question. It's a big question. Is Chiefs-Bengals the best rivalry in the National Football League?
I mean,
you
it's
like
getting
my 90s,
there.
My 90s ESPN voice in the National Football League.
Yeah, you've been practicing that one for 2 weeks.
Oh,
I can tell.
Oh, yeah. That's all I've been doing. Haven't even seen my kid.
You're working on your bits on him. It's fine.
That's
you have
right.
like a captive audience. Mm-hmm. It's getting there. I mean, I will say I want to take back on one of my takes from the preseason, and that was that Patrick Mahomes versus Josh Allen was going to be kind of our new generation's Brady Manning. And it's probably now Mahomes versus Burrow. I think we've had four really interesting games between these two teams. We've had back-to-back AFC championship games. And I think Allen and the Bills are still going to be in that mix. And I think Bills and Bengals are going to kind of be interesting for a long time to come. Bills, Chiefs, they're going to be playing each other. But the way that the NFL schedule works and that the teams that win their divisions play each other every year, we're going to be getting a lot of Bengals Chiefs, and it's really fun. And they clearly don't like each other. I think the way that yesterday's game went down is going to fuel that rivalry. The second best rival is probably now the Bengals versus the refs, Zach Taylor's face versus the officials. We're going to get to that. It's in there. You know, I think the best rivalries are always going to be the division, like the really long standing, you know, Ravens, Steelers, Chiefs, Raiders,
sure.
Cowboys, Eagles, like all those division rivalries. But these kind of like interconference rivals are really fun. And I would be okay if we get two Chiefs, Bengals games for like the next 5 years. That'd be fine.
Couple things. Number one, I think this shows you the importance, talking about the Bills and the Chiefs, is that every rivalry has to be. I'm looking for the way to say this, because I'm not going to say that you can't create a rivalry on paper, because the Bills and Chiefs weren't a rivalry on paper. They were playing big games. They played last year in the 13 seconds game. But they kind of appear at your doorstep. They appear right in your face and you go, oh, this is the best rivalry in football. You can't project it out and say, this is going, oh, in January, we're going to see these two teams. You could do that with Brady and Manning, because Brady and Manning were completely different and they were in this. And I would put Marino and Montana in this bucket as well, where you had a certain argument, which is Tom Brady was having the team success and Peyton Manning was having the individual success. Which would you rather have, right? It was back and forth. It was what would happen if you switch those players, all that stuff. We're going to have something different with Burrow and Mahomes. It is by far the best rivalry in the NFL right now. It's the two teams that I want to see on a football field the most. Like, I wish they could just play again next week. As much as respect as I have for the Eagles, I wish that they could play again. They hate each other. The Cincinnati mayor got involved in Andy Reid. Andy Reid was pissed off at the Cincinnati mayor in the postgame press conference. Well, you saw what the mayor said. Andy Reid is like the king of ignoring the noise. Travis Kelce, I understand why he was pissed at the mayor, all that stuff. Do his rock bit. I love that. All that stuff. To me, what I think is interesting is both sides are willing participants.
Yeah.
The Bengals love this villain role. The Burrowhead stuff, Eli Apple doing the Cancun on three shit with the Bills last week. Tyler Dunn had a piece a couple days ago about just basically how, and listen, every team says they're disrespected, but like they like the villain role. And that they've taken the kind of nobody believes in us thing and given it a real edge. Like, I think a lot of times there's kind of a Russell Wilson-esque superhero origin story with this respect, where they're saying, look what I overcame. And then sometimes it's just like, actually, look what I overcame, F you. And that's the Bengals. That's the Bengals. I was intrigued by something Chris Jones said after the game, where he said he basically planned for this game. His whole offseason was dedicated to this game, thinking about the plays he didn't make last year. When I talked to Mahomes in August, he was talking a lot about the Bengals and how they were basically practicing in order to finish the game against the Bengals, which I found pretty interesting. If I were to be kind of armchair psychologist, I would say that Bills were worried about the Chiefs last all of offseason and the year before, by the way, because of the year before they took two pass rushers because they wanted to beat the Chiefs. And the Chiefs were thinking about the Bengals. And that's not only because they lost to them, but because I think that there's some real animosity.
Yeah. And it's what's fun, too, is that I think if the Bengals would have won this game, that would have been four straight wins over Mahomes. And it would have been a lot of like legacy kind of stuff. And what does this mean for the Chiefs and Mahomes? And the way that they built this team up, did it fail? The fact that they won this game is going to make this rivalry all that more intense. And build it up in the way that they won. I think the Bengals are going to feel quite aggrieved by the way that they lost. I think they're going to have a really, they probably should have won that game in a lot of respects. And basically until that late hit out of bounds call, I thought they were going to win that game. I was pretty convinced. And honestly, when Harrison Butker ran out there to kick a field goal, I wasn't so sure that the game wasn't going to overtime the way that his season has gone. So maybe you're right. I'll take it.
Next year, schedule rotation, 2023, Bengals at Burrowhead Stadium.
Again.
Let's ride. I just love that. I love it. And I love, not everybody needs to be liked. Not everybody needs to be liked. And I like that the Bengals understand that. And that they've got the demeanor for it. They've got the personalities for it.
But aren't they really likable?
I love
them. I think they believe they're not liked.
Which is fine. Who cares? It's like professional wrestling. I like them quite a bit. I mean, I like both teams. There's not really a good team that I'm just like, I hate these people. There have been in the past. But for me, everyone's kind of likable right now, including like on the NFC side. Everybody's
Yeah, I think so too. But I think the Bengals view themselves, I think it might be less like as being the villain and more as being the like the underdog that nobody cares about us, small market, the NFL sure. doesn't want us here.
Sure. But the Chiefs could have made the same argument.
Yeah, except for that they've been to five straight AFC championship
games. No, I'm saying in the beginning of this.
Oh, yeah.
They could have been like, nobody wants the Chiefs to be good. You just make up your own edge. You just make up your own origin story. It's
yeah,
fine.
They do.
Nobody fact checks this stuff anymore.
But I think the Bengals have come from a year ago, everybody was like, why are they here? Like, I think there were legit a lot of people who didn't want them there last year because nobody knew who they were. It seemed sure. kind of fluky that they made it. This year, they turned themselves into a legit juggernaut type of team with really likable players. Their coaches suddenly become likable. That was not the case a year ago. And I will say, this is totally an aside. I probably shouldn't say this. This is weird. My TikTok, For You page. Oh, God. Who's scared? Is basically just Joe Burrow thirst traps. It's very weird. I don't know how we got here.
What's going on with your algorithm?
I think it's just because I'm like Googling like Joe Burrow stats a lot and like his like Pro Football Reference page. I don't know.
I don't think that's it.
So I don't know. It's weird. And there's a lot of F, Mary, Kill of NFL quarterbacks. It's very odd. I'm ready for the offseason. That's all I'm saying.
Are you ready for the next topic?
Yeah.
Or do you want to just...
This sounds like a ringer story. I like the Joe Burrow thirst traps of TikTok. We'll work
is
on that. We'll
is he the most thirsted after TikTok quarterback?
I think
from
so.
What
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Something to watch.
I'll start sending them to you in the middle of the night for your
question. I tried to do TikTok a couple weeks ago and it's just, I don't get it.
I'm glad it was
like
not
it.
Around when I was doing 3 a.m. feeds because well, I would have been sucked into a really weird place.
Here's the problem with TikTok is that for me, you can't really watch it without sound on.
True.
Right. And so I need like quiet. I'm just like browsing stuff. I don't want to wake a baby. I don't want to wake my wife. And this has been true even before the baby. Like you're just sitting there and you don't want to have like some like a Dua Lipa song blare because it's, you know, you're watching, you know, boxing highlights or, you know, some high school recruit, whatever. It's not a good app for my lifestyle. Question 4. Were the refs unusually bad on Sunday?
No. They were bad. I will give you that. They were bad. I wrote about it in our winners and losers piece on theringer.com. But they were not unusually bad. And this is the problem because we can basically count on the refs being bad or some degree of bad in basically every big game. There have been worse officiated championship games a couple years ago. I think we're both old enough to remember the non-pass interference call.
I was there.
That enabled the Rams. I was there too. It was loud as, you know, as I'll get out in that stadium in the Superdome. There was the phantom offsides, why am I blocking out his name right now from the Chiefs?
It's D.
D Ford. D Ford.
Okay.
D Ford. I was like picturing him in my head. I mean, those were like really brutal calls that completely affected those games. There were bad calls in the games yesterday, and the way that the second half of the AFC Championship game went, and it was like all the calls were going against the Bengals, you could kind of feel them stacking up and wondering what's going on. The problem, I think, is that it's not that there were multiple missed calls or questionable calls in both of the games. It's that there is this like widespread appearance of malfeasance and that there's something going on. It's a problem when Pro Football Talk, we're assuming it's Mike Florio behind that Twitter account when he kind of is going stream of consciousness on Twitter, but tweets in all caps "rigged" to his $1.8 million followers, one of the most influential NFL media people out there. That's when it becomes a problem. You know, it's Bill Simmons who like led his podcast last night with how awful the officiating was. It's when there is this growing feeling that not only is the refereeing bad, missed calls, those sorts of things, but that there's like a level of incompetence or something fishy going on about who they want to win these games. That's when it becomes a big problem.
Couple things. Number one, the Devonta Smith catch, which I thought was going to be a huge deal and ended up just not mattering for a whole bunch of reasons. Part of that's on Kyle Shanahan. Devonta Smith was clearly signaling to run the play fast.
Yeah.
And there were a couple people who said, I think maybe even Greg Olson said it, where teams basically have hand signals to just be like, go, 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 now. And pretty clear in retrospect that Devonta Smith was doing that. Kyle Shanahan's got to be a better game manager. He's got to understand the situation. He's got to look at that. He's got to find a way to slow it down, fake a damn injury. I don't care what it is. Just find a way to slow things down. Have a guy in the booth who's watching this stuff. Kyle Shanahan, and yesterday was not Kyle Shanahan's fault. That's one of our questions coming up here. But having the best plays and being the best coach are two different things.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's a whole, Kyle Shanahan has the best plays in football. Congratulations, Kyle Shanahan. But there's just a little bit where those things end up mattering. There's a lot of reasons teams win and lose football games. Okay. Two things I want to address. Number one, I saw a couple tweets, including from Emmanuel Acho, who has appeared on a Ringer podcast in the last couple of days that you should probably listen to.
Google it if you haven't.
Yeah. Shout out our buddy Van Lathan. Emmanuel Acho said, well, they shouldn't, refs should not determine the game. This is about the personal foul call at the end of the Chiefs game. I don't know what that means. Does that mean that there should be no penalties in the last minute
about
the Stanley Cup finals where they just swallow their whistle? Like if there's a rampant, you know, if there's a play where there's rampant pass interference from all five defensive backs in the field, should they not call it because that would be the ref deciding the game at the 1 yard line? Like, I don't know where the line is between the game being officiated fairly and the refs determining the game. I don't understand that. Now, here's the bigger point I want to make about the rigged thing. And there were a lot of people who were talking about this.
Yeah.
I do not think the NFL is rigged, because if the NFL was rigged, the Bengals would not be playing in the AFC Championship game. I would go as far to say that the Chiefs would not be playing in the AFC Championship game. The Cowboys not being in the Super Bowl for most players' lives, their lifespan, most players in the NFL in their lifespan at this point, like they've not seen, maybe they were born, they've not seen the Cowboys make the Super Bowl. Okay. And I don't think people really understand what a stimulus package the Cowboys are, Steelers are. All I'm saying is that if the NFL is rigging, they're doing a bad job relative to the teams that get actual ratings boosts. I had an executive tell me a few years ago for one of the networks. Basically, they figured out that if you just made your sports channel the Cowboys channel, and you can't do it because of the pressure from the NFL and the ownership, but if you just covered the Cowboys, just talked about the Cowboys and drew in the eyeballs of the people who like the Cowboys, but more importantly, people who hate the Cowboys, you would do better ratings than what you currently do. So all I'm saying is that I don't think the NFL is waiting until minute 59 of the AFC Championship game to start rigging it. If they did that, the things would be significantly different to begin with. Like, you're telling me the Jets would never get a rigging in their favor? Like, give me a break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Are you worried, question five, about the Chiefs and their health going into the Super Bowl?
Yes. I am, because we've seen, we have recent history 2 years ago about how quickly kind of their best laid plans can fall apart if an entire position group is decimated. I'm a little less worried about Mahomes' health after kind of watching him play yesterday. Like, he clearly was not himself. I mean, he wasn't able to make a lot of the athletic throws that he normally makes. He was able to kind of gut out some runs, but he's got 2 weeks now. And if he was able to kind of pull it together enough on 6 days or whatever that was, I feel like he'll be in a lot better position in 8 days. I'm very concerned about their receiving depth and their receiving group right now. So if it's the two things together, it's Mahomes, like, let's say he's at, what percentage do you think he was at yesterday? Like 40%?
I don't know. I was going to go higher. I was going to 65.
You're going to go higher. If he was at 65, let's say he's at 75 to 80. In 2 weeks, but that receiving group is basically Travis Kelce and MVS and Sky Moore. If they don't have Kadarius Toney, if they don't have Juju Smith-Schuster, if they don't have Justin Watson, who didn't even dress for the game yesterday, it's just a little bit concerning to me when all of a sudden you're a team that can win basically one way, maybe two ways if you want to throw in Pacheco. But I'm concerned about it just because it's going to be a big storyline. You know, the whole story for the Chiefs this year has been, how did they remake their offense without Tyreek Hill? And they succeeded better than I think almost anybody expected to. But now they're going into the Super Bowl with this remade receiving group being a huge question mark.
That's the biggest thing for me is if Mahomes was 100%, I'd have a lot better time saying, oh, Mahomes against this Eagles team, say less, he's got this. The fact that we don't know anything about it, and he's played through, Veach told me a couple years ago with that toe injury that the doctors saw it after the season, were like, you should not have been playing, brother. And he does that, and he does it, and he makes it look normal. And I said this yesterday, but he has these injuries that a lot of quarterbacks wouldn't play through. And then, like, within a quarter, he makes a throw, like the MVS throw, where you're just like, okay, that would have been the best throw in the history of 10 franchises. Like, what Mahomes is, like, 150th best throw of his career, maybe even lower, would be the best throw in the history of the Detroit Lions franchise. Yes. Stafford had some good ones. But probably. Carolina Panthers. Yeah.
Cleveland Browns.
Tennessee Titans just starting in Nashville. Probably. Maybe Aaron McNair had some. I haven't seen, but like some of those throws, the MVS throw, a lot of it, you know, hell, before Tom Brady, even with Tom Brady, the Bucs franchise, tell me Brad Johnson, give me a break. Sean King, come on. All right. Anyway, yes, I'm extremely worried about the depth, and not just Kadarius Toney, Juju and Hardman. Legarius Sneed, left the game. Yeah. Willie Gay left the game. You start to chip away at that. I saw a stat. Chris Berman had it. Boomer was back on ESPN last night, and I had a great time. He said that, and I'm sure this came from ESPN, but he said that the Eagles started the game on Sunday with the same 22 starters they had week one.
Yeah.
And they had a ton of injury luck in the year in the Wentz era, which is funny because Wentz obviously tore his ACL, nothing you can do about that. But they've got good trainers. They maximize it. Now, that stuff regresses, but it ain't going to regress in 2 weeks. It's going to regress in like 2 years. Okay. That's how this works. And
well,
it's
and
a long-term
had their, thing. They had their injury dip late in the season where it started to look like, oh, maybe this is crumbling, but they got Lane Johnson back. They got
Jalen Hurts back.
Chauncey Gardner-Johns back. Yeah, their quarterback back. Although, like, maybe could have run him a little less yesterday on those design runs. They got Avante Maddox
back. Once they went up a couple multiple scores on a team that was warming up Christian McCaffrey on the sidelines, yeah, I think that they could have started to move that. All right, we're moving on. Question six. Is there anything Kyle Shanahan could have done to win on Sunday?
I don't think so, man. I mean, I don't know if Kyle Shanahan's going to win Coach of the Year. My guess is that he's not going to. He is a finalist. I'm sure he got a lot of votes the way the new system works, but he absolutely deserves whatever votes he got because of how he coached the season to get them to the NFC Championship game on three different quarterbacks. But at some point, that just kind of ran out. And there was a lot of discussion about the emergency quarterback rule, and they should have been able to have a third quarterback active. But the fact was, is they just didn't have anybody else, even if that rule had been in place. Like, they didn't have some dude stashed on the practice squad that was better than Josh Johnson. And it's not like Josh Johnson's, I mean, Josh Johnson was not good. They weren't going to win that game if Josh Johnson had played 2.5 quarters or however, three and a half quarters, however long it was. So I don't think so. I mean, the defense unraveled. You know, if they'd kept their composure a little bit better, maybe kept the Niners in it longer, maybe something weird could happen, because it's not like the Eagles were like lighting it up offensively. I mean, it wasn't this, you know, this, they scored a lot of points, but it wasn't this like hugely confidence inspiring type of offense or performance out of Philadelphia. I think the Niners maybe could have hung in there a little bit longer and hoped to get some breaks. You know, flip the field a couple times, defensive touchdown, those sorts of things. But from like an offensive coaching standpoint, I think they were done. I mean, George Kittle's reaction at the end, you saw him, his quote, right, where he was like on the podium. He said, what does it feel like to lose a game because we don't have a quarterback? It feels shitty. Like, that's when you just know that there was nothing else you could do. I think they understood that they kind of got this magical ride out of Brock Purdy, a kid who was never supposed to be there, was never supposed to win 9 straight games or whatever it was. And it happened. And then that luck just runs out. So I feel bad for Kyle Shanahan. It's another postseason like disappointment gut punch. But I just, absent like a time machine or like crazy injections into Jimmy Garoppolo's foot, that he could have been active in time for this game. I don't think there was anything else.
So there are things Kyle Shanahan could have done to make it a closer game.
Yeah.
Defense was playing pretty sloppy. They didn't deserve all those defensive penalties, but they deserved a whole bunch of them. Okay. I have a question, and I actually cannot find if I asked Kyle Shanahan this, and I'm actually genuinely curious to the point that I thought about emailing the 49ers or just trying to otherwise figure out some intel on this. Juwan Jennings was the fourth ranked high school quarterback in his draft class. Okay. It is astounding to me. Let me read you the rankings. Jarrett Stidham, number one, Kyler Murray, number two, Brandon Wimbush, number three, excuse me, Travis Johnson was number four, who ended up, by the way, practice squad receiver on the Bucks and won a ring. Juwan Jennings was number five, committed to Tennessee. Number six, Sam Darnold. Number seven, Joe Burrow. Number nine, Lamar Jackson. Okay? That's where we're at. And listen, I don't mean to sit here and say that Juwan Jennings should have been some great quarterback or whatever. But what I am saying is clearly he had some aptitude for the position and could have run around because he's very good. You know, he's obviously extremely athletic at playing receiver in the NFL, could have thrown the ball, added an extra dimension. And it felt like he wasn't even a consideration. And I just don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. And I don't know if he was overthinking it or, you know, oh, we want to run the wildcat and not run their offense, whatever. You just need to be able to throw the ball. Christian McCaffrey, by the way, at one point I went on a show, I remember having this stat, but Christian McCaffrey had more deep touchdown passes than Jimmy Garoppolo this year, right? Like I think he had a 40-yard touchdown at one point. I understand that he can play. I'm just saying Christian McCaffrey probably needed to play running back. He was the only thing that was going for them in the second quarter. I think we need to, by the way, to sort of lump this all in with some of the weird decisions that he made. I don't think that if you play this game 100 times, that Kyle Shanahan would win very many times. I think that he would win a couple times because there could be some fumble luck thing or the turnovers or the Eagles have all their quarterbacks get hurt. He played 100 times. Yeah, the Niners are going to win a couple of them. But that's only because of the breaks of the game and the way football works. But I do think that he, kind of what I talked about earlier with some of the challenges, some of the play calling, I just feel he could have made this a little closer. It's two separate things. The Niners have nothing to be ashamed of season-wide. If you're talking about two quarterbacks going down, Brock Purdy going 7-0, Josh Johnson can't take a snap, falling on. By the way, when he couldn't take that snap, and that was what changed the entire game, fall on the ball better. But I don't know what that was. It was like he was stunned. I thought it was a false start, and I thought that maybe he thought it was a false start. But then he could just fall on the ball. Like, you see that all the well-coached teams plan, and they just say, okay, well, we're just going to fall on the ball just in case. I don't know what it was, but that was brutal. All right, question number 7. Do you think it's fair to point out that the Eagles haven't played anybody?
I mean, their schedule is what it is. Right. I mean, I was looking through it yesterday. I've talked to Ben Solek about this a lot as he's been trying to rein in his Eagles enthusiasm a little bit. He actually picked the Niners in this game, which which Eagles fans have pointed out to him a lot on Twitter. But like they played who they played. And the best quarterbacks that they beat this year are washed up Aaron Rodgers at midseason when the Packers were a mess and probably Kirk Cousins back in week 2. You know, it hasn't been the type of juggernaut that they would have had to face if they were in the AFC with Mahomes and Burrow and Allen and Lamar Jackson and Justin Herbert. That just wasn't what their schedule was this year. You know, they lost to Dak Prescott and the Cowboys when Prescott was healthy. They beat the Cowboys with Cooper Rush. Was that something that happened this year? Like, I can't remember the Cooper Rush era.
Cooper Rush era. Nora and I went to a Cooper Rush started game.
I do remember that. Yeah. Wow. What a time. What a time. That was your previous life. Good luck. Good luck going to a Monday Night Football game in your near future.
I actually think I was thinking about this. I think that when Teddy's older, Monday and Thursday are the only games I'm going to get to with him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Can't go to a Sunday game. Event, yeah, like 5 years from now. But that's the way. That's the way for him to see live football.
Yeah. So we do preseason and we did a Saturday week 18 game. That was a really nice way to do it. So keep that in mind for the future. But look, they play who they play. I mean, I think it's fair to question them because they haven't maybe been tested in the way that some other teams have been tested in terms of like the opposing offenses they have to face. But it shouldn't make them any less formidable. I mean, the truth is that their roster is as good as anybody is in football this year, 1 through 53. Their quarterback has played great. And now we'll get a test. You know, they're going to have their best offense that they've had to face. Their best complete team is going to be in 2 weeks. So we'll find out.
So Warren Sharp did a breakdown before the season, and the Eagles had the second easiest schedule based on, I believe, Vegas win totals. And those things changed, and I think he readjusted it. But I think that the takeaway was that the Eagles had the second easiest schedule in football. Okay, Giants being number one. Right behind them, Colts and the Bears did not take advantage of their easy schedule. You win a bunch of games in the regular season. And by the way, again, I just said the Giants had the number one easiest schedule. A bunch of teams had an easy schedule. But you win a bunch of games in the regular season in order to have the bye, in order to have an easy path. And the bye, and one of the things I think, one of their arguments I heard against the home field, I guess you could say, title game, is that the bye is already so important. They don't need the bye. A team doesn't need the bye and home field advantage in the conference championship game. Well, but let's put that aside for a second. But I think that there are two separate things here. The first thing is I heard a bunch of media during the broadcast. I heard it on ESPN afterwards. Heard a bunch of people say it on Twitter saying, well, you can't take anything away from the Eagles. You can't take anything away from the fact that you know, oh yeah, sure, the Niners couldn't throw the ball, but you can't take away anything from the Eagles. Yes, you can. You can. Why can't you? Why can't you discuss it? We can't just sit here and say, we have to judge the Eagles on who they played. Well, no. You can say the Eagles are a great team and also say, by the way, they beat Daniel Jones and like an armless Brock Purdy. That's fine to say. The NFC was weak this year. You can say that. We've said that 100 times. Remember when the damn NFC won like every single Super Bowl for a long ass time?
Yeah.
And we used to say, man, the AFC is weak. You get to say that. You can say that. They get to this isn't college football where we're going to argue hypotheticals and is this team better than this team? They're going to get to prove it in 2 weeks. So who cares? Yeah. Who cares? This is a completely this is a conversation we get to have because it's going to end up not mattering. So you get to throw it out there and say, yeah, the Eagles haven't played anybody. Fine. Like, fine. We can say that. And then in 2 weeks, we get to find out if they're the best team in football because they're playing what I consider to be normally the best team in football. So this is great.
And that's why I'm really like, I'm happy about this matchup. And I think like had the Bengals won this game too, they beat the Chiefs, I think it would have been a really great Super Bowl matchup because a lot of the strengths that we see in the Chiefs are similar things in the Bengals. But we got the best two teams. We've got the best two teams narratively. We got the teams that were widely considered to be the best two teams in football for a majority of the season. And now we're going to get our answer. And we can debate this for 2 weeks. I'm not going to watch the ESPN hot take shows because it's going to get insufferable over the next 2 weeks with these sorts of topics. So I'm glad we got it out of the way now.
I disagree. Dan Orlovsky had a wonderful suit on today. I thought about getting in touch and asking him where that suit is from.
Well, he's quite available. If you, I don't think it'll be hard to find out.
I'm DM him right now.
He'll probably respond by the time before we wrap up, which is why Dan is great. Although I don't know where you're going to be wearing a suit anytime soon.
Are you joking? I'm wearing one every day of Super Bowl week.
Every day of Super Bowl week. No, I can't wait. Yes. And then you'll wear nothing but joggers for the next 3 months, which I appreciate.
You'd wait to, right out of frame are all my dress shirts and then my suits are right over here. I am cooking.
Everybody keeps asking me if we're sure that you want to go to the Super Bowl. And I'm like, he is ready.
I'll say this publicly. I said it to you privately. So I was able to tell people we were going to have a baby when I was at my training camp tour. So I'm talking to people inside the league and media and all that stuff. And I was like, you know, my baby is going to be a month when the Super Bowl comes. And half the people were like, okay, well, when your baby is in your arms, you're going to realize that, like, you don't care about the Super Bowl. You don't care about anything. Like, you're just captured by the wonder of creation, right? And then half the people were like, a month in is about right. But you're going to want to get away. You're going to want to get away. I had some people who were like, I actually came up with like fake work trips 6 weeks in. And some people told me that. And I'm like, well,
I'm assuming these are men that you're talking to.
Yes. I mean, this is actually
just getting that out.
What you're getting at is actually why we need more women in the NFL front offices.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Last question. Not related to Sunday. What is the most surprising part of the coaching carousel? Now, it can be related to Sunday because Kellen Moore is out as Cowboys OC. Apparently, he's talking to the Chargers. Wouldn't be opposed to that. Is anyone ever going to get hired again as an NFL coach once again?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the lack of speed with all of this. I mean, the Senior Bowl is starting today. I mean, everybody is arriving in Mobile. And it for years and years and years, a lot of the urgency with getting coaches hired and their staffs built was so that they could be together in Mobile, that they could have their staffs put together so that they could start all of their offseason preparations and draft free agency planning and getting to the combine. And one of the things that we've kind of, I think the collective we for a while have been saying is like, why does it have to be so fast? Slow down, do a better job vetting the candidates, get a deeper candidate pool, look at the coaches that are in the conference championship games and in the Super Bowl. But now that we're here, it's kind of like, well, why is nobody getting hired? And it does feel a little bit like they're waiting for some dominoes to fall and to figure out, like, is Sean Payton going to take a job? And if Sean Payton takes a job, then what happens after that? Is Jim Harbaugh going to get back in the mix? Denver doesn't seem to have quite let that go. The Broncos coaching search seems to be messy, to say the least, in terms of like direction and who they're actually looking at and who they're going to hire. But it does seem kind of like there's a lot of teams like staring at each other, waiting for somebody to make a hire and then see what comes next. I did see what the news Monday morning was that the Cardinals are going to interview Lou Anarumo. Finally, Big Lou gonna get an interview. You know, I think Brian Callahan got one interview. There's a bunch of guys on the Eagles staff that are still in the mix. A couple guys on the Chiefs staff that might still be a little bit in the mix. Mike Kafka from the Giants is now back. I mean, so there's just names all over the place and no real consensus on who is going to go where.
I think part of it is NFL teams are trying to maybe operate a little differently on who they hire and how they hire in the sense of like roles, right? And I think there were for a couple of years, I did a story last year about how basically the number two and a coordinator from a team that made the championship game the year before is the most likely hired person in the NFL, right? And I think teams are trying to get away from like, oh, this is a good coordinator, let's just hire him. But I don't think that they're that efficient at that. And so we're looking at Jim Harbaugh, we're looking at Sean Payton, and we're trying to suss out whether or not all of that makes any sense. And I think that for those roles. And so you see Greg Penner taking a second meeting with Jim Harbaugh, his first in-person one after Harbaugh already said he's coming back. And I just think that I don't blame them, because I think you should kind of take every measure. But for me, it just seems like a lot of fishing expeditions. Anything on the Broncos? I do want to say real quick is that there was a Mark Maskey report that Sean Payton was worried he was going to clash with a member of ownership. And I'm laughing now thinking it's Lewis Hamilton.
I mean, I hope it's Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah. Just Lewis Hamilton.
I'm guessing
a complete
it's not.
Nightmare.
I'm guessing it's not.
Just Lewis Hamilton, a complete nightmare in the draft room. They're going to have to take it. They're going to be like Stephen with Jerry Jones, have to take the draft card away when he's trying to draft a quarterback.
I would like him to be more involved. The crossovers between the Slow News Day / F1 pod possibilities.
Ain't that the truth? There.
No, we'll just see. We'll just see if any of these teams are actually going to hire anybody. The OC hires have been way more interesting. The OC intrigue of late.
Yeah. All right. This has been great. We'll see you next week. We have an episode on Wednesday with a famous person who's been on the show a bunch. We're excited about it. It's not Lindsey Jones on Wednesday. She is a famous person who's been on this show a bunch. And then Danny Kelly's going to round us out.
I thought that was the intro for Danny Kelly, which I was really impressed the way that you were building
Danny
up Kelly's
Danny Kelly. Never been on Slow News Day, if I'm not mistaken.
How?
I don't think so.
This is very exciting. Does he know what he needs to wear? We should send him a
Well, he's going to be the senior wardrobe guidelines. He's going to be wearing a hoodie and a hat. Yeah. He's going to be wearing a hat. Okay.
And maybe
Lindsey Jones. Yeah. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
This has been Slow News Day. Thank you to Richie Bozick, production help. We'll see you later.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.